You're listening to Open Airways, stories from the back of the ambulance.
My story stems from my internship during my paramedic program as a student before graduation. That got me interested in some of the content that I teach currently. So I'm all excited, a very eager paramedic student, finished my didactic, I finished my clinicals, I'm ready to hit the street. And I get out there and, you know, I think I was about halfway through my internship experience, so my ego's getting bigger as we go, which is always dangerous. So we get a call for a narcotic overdose in a parking lot. So we rush code 3 and fire meets us there in the particular city we were working in. And we show up and fire is there before us and they've got the patient out of the car. They're unresponsive. We're in the parking lot. It's kind of dusk time. And I've got all these, as a new student, I've got all these drugs running through my head of what I should be giving this person, because of course I haven't made the leap from I need to do BLS before ALS, so they haven't quite settled in yet. So I know I got Narcan on my head because this patient is definitely in a narcotic coma. So great, I got Narcan in my head, I got the dose in my head, I know the protocols, I think I'm doing great. There's 3 fire guys on scene. One of them's a very senior captain who's actively involved in patient care. Who's probably at least 20 years my senior in field experience, since I'm just starting. He knows I'm an intern, and we get on scene, and he decides to give an incorrect dose of Narcan to this patient. I recognize that it's an incorrect dose in my head, but I just think kind of, that's weird. Maybe the dose I remember is not correct. Because surely this guy that's been doing this for so long can't get this wrong. So my preceptor, of course, is watching me and is watching the dose that was wrong. And the dose wasn't terribly wrong, so it was grossly unsafe for the patient. But still, nonetheless, it was wrong. So I chalked that in the back of my head, like, okay, after this call's done, I need to check my protocols because that's not the dose I remember. So we get the patient packaged up, we get him into the back of the ambulance, and the fire chief wants to give him another dose of Narcan because he doesn't think that their level of responsiveness is coming up fast enough. So you titrate Narcan to bring somebody's level of responsiveness up until ideally they're breathing on their own and not fighting you. So the fire chief pushes the last bit of Narcan before the patient gets loaded in the back of the ambulance. And I'm sure those of you that have had this experience before can see this coming. Now the patient's mine. Now I don't have to deal with the fire chief. It's just me in the back. My preceptor's in the back. My preceptor's just looking at me like he can see what's happening, but I don't anticipate it. So the patient, the Narcan fully sets in now, and this patient is now vomiting all over me and is very unhappy that we took her high away so rapidly and put her through withdrawals. So I had to deal with all kinds of cleanup, and we had some enlightening discussions after the call was over. But the lesson that it taught me was, and the lesson that I teach my students now, is it's really important to pay attention to that gut feeling that says, that's probably not the right dose. And then the other important thing is that concept of an authority gradient on scene is super powerful. So I had... you know, 1 month of experience. Fire chief had at least 20 years of experience. And what turned out was there was just a recent protocol change over the last 6-8 months. The fire chief was giving the old protocol dose, and I, of course, being the diligent student, learned the new protocol dose, so I didn't have anything to change. I just knew it was different, and consequently, the dosage was decreased, so you didn't have people vomiting all over you. So I teach my students now, pay attention to your gut, and don't be afraid to speak up to somebody that's more senior on scene, because it will help in patient safety, and it'll help in your care overall.
Thanks so much for sharing that story, Jamie. I have all sorts of questions running through my mind right now. The first question is relating to the whole idea of this fire chief giving a dose that you know is incorrect, and you're a paramedic. Was he a paramedic also, or how was it that he still had control of this call when you were a paramedic?
All right, great question. So in the particular city that I was in, when you show up, you can make arguments if it's good or bad, but when you show up, there's two paramedics on the ambulance, and then fire crew, there's usually at least two paramedics, if not three paramedics, on the fire engine in this particular city. So you show up on scene, you could have from 4 to 5 paramedics and maybe 1 or 2 basics there as well. So the legality around it is whoever shows up first, it's their patient until somebody with more medical training shows up. If you have the same level of medical training in this system, and a fire medic shows up first, it's their patient until I get the patient on my gurney. And then it becomes my patient, and then there's usually a very smooth handoff that takes place in an ideal setting that says, you had leadership ability over this scene, and now the patient's mine, now I'm leading the scene. And so you go from a team member to a team leader at that point.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned wanting to talk to the fire chief, at least now looking back. You know, what would you do differently? You would have talked to him. But when he's in the process of giving care to this patient, how would you have done that in a way where you're having this discussion with him, but you're not eroding at the patient's confidence level in you as providers?
Yeah, super difficult. So one thing we do in our program to teach students how to overcome that is first pay attention to it, and then second, find a comfortable way to interject your concerns. So I should have said something like, are we sure that dose is correct? I'm concerned that's not the right dose. Can we check that dose? Something like that, just to give a little bit of pause to say, hopefully have the chief say, I'm not sure that dose is right either. Can somebody confirm this? And then there's usually a escalation of language and behavior that can go from very mitigated concerns of all the way at one end of the spectrum saying just a little gut in your feeling and you just kind of go, huh, but you don't really verbalize anything, to the other end of the spectrum saying, chief, you're wrong, move out of the way, the patient's mine. Somewhere in the middle, hopefully you don't have to get too far escalated, but somewhere in there you need to feel comfortable escalating it to a point where the chief stops what he's doing, confirms what the dose is, and then moves on. But you can try, and it sometimes might not work because it's a very personality-dependent thing.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's also very dependent on the situation. In this situation, you felt like the amount of Narcan, even though it wasn't correct, it wasn't going to kill the patient. So where you would fall on that scale in terms of just not saying anything versus, you know, making a big deal out of it is going to depend on how badly the patient would be harmed by this other person's
absolutely
action.
Absolutely. Kind of the you gauge it based on the severity of the impact of the error. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you hope, but there's a whole lot of culture, microculture on that scene, on any scene, that you have to wade through, and you hope anybody that sees, you hope you can foster a culture on scene so anybody that sees any sort of patient safety issue is comfortable raising their concerns and having them dealt with appropriately. And then those raising of those concerns escalates quicker if there's significant severity involved. Yeah, absolutely.
It was interesting also to hear that once the patient became your patient, once you got into the back of the ambulance, the preceptor knew what had happened to the patient, knew what the likely result would be, and I imagine they could have done something to have eased that result. But that preceptor made a conscious choice to watch this play out.
Yep.
Why do you think the preceptor did that?
I think it was to make a more impactful learning opportunity. And you could definitely argue the ethical challenges of compromising patient care to some extent in order to improve learning. But I think he knew it was not a life-threatening issue. There was certainly pain and discomfort involved in the patient's side, but it's something I'll never forget and never let happen again. So it certainly made an etch in my brain of won't let that one happen again.
It sounds like the pain and suffering you experienced and has carried you, you're reminded of it throughout your career was maybe worth the pain and suffering that patient may have experienced.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's a hard measuring stick. But certainly, I it's leveraged in the sense that now I teach and continue that training to, I don't know, I think I'm on 3 classes now, so 60-plus students, to try to help them not have to go through a similar experience where a patient gets harmed in some way to benefit their learning. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I'm working to make up for that. Yeah.
I imagine you've made up for it many times over the years.
I hope so. But again, it's super hard to judge the value of suffering.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I appreciated what you said about the whole idea that, when you're training students, when you're precepting students, there's a certain level of care that you have to be okay with. Because granted, a student isn't going to treat the patient as efficiently or maybe as perfectly as someone who's been in the field 20 years. Still, they have to be allowed to make certain numbers, certain mistakes, in order to learn, in order to become that 20-year experienced medic. And so I imagine precepting is a really tough job because as a preceptor, you're having to watch care that's not quite as good as you would do it. You're having to watch patients experience more pain and suffering, even if it's just 3 needle sticks instead of 1, and always as a preceptor needing to gauge, how harmful is this to my patient? How important is this to the student to learn? And how long do I sit here on my hands or sit here, just watching?
Yep. Super difficult and very dynamic situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both made during your internship and in clinicals. And really training in general. Just training within the EMS world has some sharp, pokey edges in it, in that patients end up taking some of the punishment for it. And obviously not EMS in general, but medicine being more art than science. Patients end up supporting, in a sense, that progress. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but very difficult as a preceptor, absolutely, to know when's it worth it and when's it not. And because of that, it's very personality dependent, I think.
Now, do you have a role of training the preceptors that your students ride along with?
No, and I think that's true with most programs. It's an unfortunate thing. As most programs have a very controlled environment, in how their students are learning content and skills, whether it's their didactic session or their lab session. It's a very controlled environment, for lack of a better word. One step more removed from that is when they go to their clinicals. The program does have quite a bit of influence over which clinicals they get to go to, but not so much control about what happens inside of those clinicals, right? We're not training the nurses and the ED docs in the EDs that they go to how to support our students. We pick EDs that we think are more supportive versus other EDs, but there's no individual training. One step more removed is the internship. We try to pick internship sites across the country that have good preceptorship and good learning environments, but we don't offer any really formal training of their preceptors. We rely on the internship sites qualification to become a preceptor, and we have some objectives that we'd like the preceptors to cover with students, but nothing that's very tightly controlled.
Okay.
Yeah, so you end up having less and less control the further the student matures in their education.
Are there any tools that you have found useful in evaluating the sites that you go to, you know, in terms of being able to identify which sites are worthwhile for your students? What tools have been useful to you?
Yeah, it's a little bit outside of my scope within my institution on how that's developed. I think it's a lot of past history success. Mm-hmm. I think our program tends to go towards level one trauma centers, mm-hmm. as opposed to more tertiary care centers.
Mm-hmm.
Probably if we find a particular department chair that really supports paramedic students, and that person's often a paramedic in their past, they recognize the importance of the training in a clinical environment before they get kind of kicked out of the nest. That tends to help quite a bit. Yeah.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.